No longer will July 11th be the birthday of Ailish Forfar. Henceforth, it will be the day the Toronto Maple Leafs acquired two-time, potentially three-time, four-time Stanley Cup champion, Matt Murray. How was your birthday?
It was great. It was great. It was really lovely to get some content delivered to my phone in the middle of dinner, which was exciting.
Where'd you go?
And I went to the Broadview Hotel. Lovely spot.
Yeah, it's nice.
A very lovely spot. Good skyline view. Great food. Great drinks.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a little bit of... I had my Twitter alerts on just for specific individuals, such as an Elliot Friedman. Mm. And then, boom. Matt Murray's, it's happening. And then I was like, all right, well, fun is over. Time to work.
Fun is over. Yes. Is that what you said at the dinner?
Don't bring me that next drink.
Yeah, is that what you said?
Get me a notepad.
Yeah, the notepad.
But it was funny because at the end of the show yesterday, we said, you know, it'd be a nice birthday gift to get some sort of signing. And my other birthday gift was that the Jays weren't playing. Well, I definitely got birthday gift number one.
So, to me, this was... I was already ready for the Matt Murray show because, like I said yesterday, I was very busy yesterday. Like, I did three different shows. I did Blake Murphy's Blue Jays Talk Plus. We did Concern Rankings.
Mm-hmm. They're probably pretty high,
My old friend Andrew Walker's show. And then I did Matthew Barnaby's podcast. And Barnaby's based out of Ottawa. And he gives me his chirps, you know, wow, he's doing with Matt Murray. And I was like, I'm prepared for this. I've readied myself. I'm already steeling myself for this event. So I have pros and cons list for Matt Murray today. I've thought about it a lot. Like, I've really thought about it a lot. It didn't just hit me in the moment. And here's the thing. There are a lot of both. And it's a complicated move for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I will just preface it by saying that the reason I had sort of come around on it when I was getting chirped, and my number one thing that I have responded to those that have things to say, is that the goaltending market right now, this is, and I'm not trying to excuse this in terms of, oh, if the Leafs missed the Stanley Cup playoffs this year, or if they, or I shouldn't say missed the playoffs, God, that would a disaster. That would be obviously that. But I think at least, you know, if they don't get out of the first round again, if they even, I don't know, again, I don't know what the actual bar is with this franchise anymore. Like, it's been so long since they won a playoff series that it does feel like there's going to be some form of euphoria to winning a round, which I think would be kind of embarrassing if they lost in the second. Mm-hmm. Regardless, how they got here is the more interesting question. But being here, it was very clear. If you needed a goalie this year, it was the worst of times. The Washington Capitals are going to have to pay Darcy Kemper. I have seen some prognostications go over the $6 million mark on a six-year term. Jack Campbell, by all accounts, is going north of $5 million, and he's going to be getting a five-year term. I think that Jack today, tomorrow, we're going to have to see Wednesday what he actually ends up settling for, what he ends up signing for. But I do think that it's interesting that the Leafs are just like, I've been out on him ever since the middle of the season. But if you look at those two guys, and you look at the position right now and their ages, and you think about term, and where that term takes you in terms of what it does with this core and what kind of money is on the books, it's a pretty uncomfortable situation. If I would have told you at the beginning of the season, Jack Campbell 5 years, I think a lot of people would have balked at that. A lot of people would have said, absolutely not, you cannot give Jack Campbell 4 years. I think most of our conversations between you and I surrounded the idea of Jack Campbell on a three-year deal. And we have more information now from Elliot Friedman. We'll play a clip about Jack later, but the goaltending market itself today, Ville Husso went off the board. He went for a third-round pick to Detroit, and they immediately signed him to a $4.75 million deal. Ville Husso has one season of track record. He's a wild card, and he required an asset going out the door. The Toronto Maple Leafs went out and got a guy who was not as good last year, but had a stretch that was just as good as anything Ville Husso put together, but acquired a third-round pick. Toronto did not have a third to give to St. Louis in that deal. If they would have tried to outbid that Detroit deal, they would have had to give up the second that they had moved down for and acquired through Chicago, or moved back again and found a way to package whatever asset that was ahead of that Detroit pick to shuffle in Ville Husso. Okay, so that's just the parameters of getting Husso. You could argue that Toronto didn't do a good enough sales pitch for Marc-Andre Fleury, that they should have made a better one, that they should have upped the per annum, that they should have had a better better pitch for him, because he went to Minnesota, and there's some familiarity there. He might have already been settled, decided that with his family, known the teammates, who knows? But he maybe thought, I don't want to do another move. I just moved from Vegas, I went to Chicago, and now I've gone to Chicago and I've gone to Minnesota. I don't want to go to Toronto now. That's four times in 2 years. That's too many. So maybe it was Dubas, but I look at it and say, it seems pretty reasonable to assume that he got what was his kind of max offer, which was a two-year deal. He got good money, and he was happy settling into a situation where he knew the team was going to be trying to be competitive for 2 years, and he was already rooted. So the question becomes, when we're discussing Matt Murray, right now, what would you have rather had them do? Because John Gibson was always a pipe dream. It was always a long shot of all long shots, and it doesn't necessarily appear to be that he's even available. So I think the question really comes down to, would you have liked Toronto to have entered a market where they gave too much term to a goaltender that was in their 30s, have traded a second-round pick to have given Ville Husso a contract extension, have given Marc-Andre Fleury something ridiculous like a third or a fourth year at, you know, more money than what he received, because I think that's what it would have taken to move him. Or would you have rather they entered today, or sorry, free agency with no goaltenders at all, with all their eggs trying to move into making sure that they acquired somebody like, who's the kid that got bought out of Washington just now?
Ilya
Samsonov.
Samsonov. Lots of
Except for they say Samsonov.
Yeah, so I was like, which one is it?
But all your eggs into a basket where free agency was extremely thin and there was no guaranteed goaltender. I guess all I'm saying in this is that Toronto did come out of it with, and I'm going to go over the pros and cons, because I said, I think there's cons, and I think that there's a lot of room to criticize Dubas on this. Mm-hmm. I just want to be fair looking at it through the lens of what the actual market was, because I think a lot of the discussion yesterday that was kind of shaped on social media was very much surrounding it as though the Leafs had a plan to go get a Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound, and they didn't really care about the rest of the goaltending market, and they went out and got their guy. And
you
I
have
just
to lay
don't...
it out for like context, because it is so easy to look at the alert on your phone and say, "Well, oh my God,
Why are they doing this?
This guy is injury ridden. You know, he's not proven. It's been four or five seasons since he had a great season." Then you see the Sault Ste. Marie connections, and it's easy to get in that rabbit hole of, "Here we go. The Leafs have, you know, missed the boat, and they've done something horrendous." Like that's like it's so easy to just jump into that ship, but I think you're doing a great job at laying it out so you can have more of a level-headed conversation and do the pros and cons, which I do believe are many.
I just think that when you're framing the discussion of, well, what were the Leafs doing? What are they doing here? You need to be able to look at what is available to them. And to me, it's like, this is just like our show. Right, when we're discussing what are we going to do on the show, and our group is getting together, our team is getting together, hey, what guests are we going to have, all what are we going to do, best idea wins. Okay, so again, if you can present a better idea, then you can go ahead and win. And if you, again, sports are healthy and awesome, and if you think that they should have given Jack Campbell a 5 over 5, I think that that's a reasonable discussion. I don't think that's outrageous. I don't think that you're an idiot. I don't think that anything like that. I just look at it and say, you've got to accept that 3 extra years at more money than what Matt Murray's going to be making for a goaltender that has not won any Stanley Cups, who has put together, who did have an up and down season last year, who was a career backup, and who, yeah, many people were kind of like, remember last year's trade deadline is all I need to say. Last year's trade deadline was what? The Leafs need to go out and get a goalie. And part of that was Mrazek. that you wanted to dump that contract. But a big part of it was that people didn't believe in Jack. They had seen what he had done coming back from his injury. He was not the same guy. It was very Freddie Anderson-ish last year. It was very much like, wow, what an amazing start. Oh, my God, what an ugly middle. Okay, now we're talking again at the end. And then a solid but non-game-stealing, series-stealing playoffs. Very much the Freddie Anderson template that we had seen here in the city for years. And then all of a sudden everyone's like in total love with Jack Campbell and the idea of giving him 5 years. All I'm saying is that it's a debate. There are actual questions here. I don't think that the Matt Murray signing or a trade is so bad that it's like an embarrassment for the Toronto Maple Leafs or it should have melted down the social media app yesterday. Here's what I will say. It's very clear that Kyle Dubas's job is on the line with this. I think that the Sault Ste. Marie connection is very obvious and clear, that they know him, mm-hmm. that their head of goaltending is a friend of Matt Murray's, and that mm-hmm. this played some form of an impact on this. And if it does go wrong, if it does not work...
That's it.
Oh, not only is that it, because it doesn't appear that... Like, if there's a secondary move that's coming here, that's going to be the interesting thing for me today, too, is like... Or over the next couple of days.
Now they have that third that they can flip, and they can use that in something, and... I think the biggest feeling that a lot of people are having is your tandem Murray and Sjallgren. There has to be some, like, do you feel confident with a Murray and
no.
Sjallgren? Yes. So where is the secondary goaltending move? Is that now or is that later?
I think that there has to at least be something now. There can't be, you can't do the Blue Jays will build the bullpen in the season move. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that you have another goaltender in the stable. And I'm not sure who that goaltender is today, but I will tell you that they're going to need to bring somebody else in. Sjallgren and Wall are not going to be enough as backups. Those two guys are bonuses to me, where you find out what you have in them if you are in dire need. Like, that is what you will need to do next year. Next year's too important. Like, okay, I guess I'm ready to start to get into the pros and cons
yes.
list. Next year is too important to me. It's too important to everyone. And everyone gets that it's about the next 2 years of Austin Matthews. But I do also believe that it is about the future of Austin Matthews. And this is a little telling in terms of the Leafs' confidence level in retaining him. The fact that they don't want to put money on the books beyond his contract does tell me a little bit that he still might want, like, that his priority might still be to be the highest paid player ever in NHL history. Like, again, that he's a guy that designed his contract in a certain way to make sure that he hit for unrestricted free agency early. And I was toying with this idea the other day, like, the flat cap has been so harsh on the NHL, right? You're looking at things like the contracts that some of these elite players are signing, the top end guys, the term is going unbelievably long because they're trying to make up for the per annum that they just can't give players. And I did wonder, how much less money is Mitch Marner's next contract going to be than the one that he's making right now? How much money is Austin Matthews' next contract going to be? He's kind of a more interesting case because he's one of those like max salary slot NHL players that you'll pay up to anything to keep. But will he be the guy who ends up sacrificing dollars? I don't know. But either way, part of you not putting any money on the books moving forward, I think that that's... I think that's interesting. The other side of this, too, and again, we'll get into the Jack thing, but with the 5 years with Jack Campbell at a five-year contract at 5x5 sounds a lot like Matt Murray's deal. I'm just mm-hmm. saying, like that, except for it's a guy that didn't win. Yeah, it's a guy who didn't win, and it's a guy who you're telling me you couldn't see 2 years from now that Jack Campbell contract looks exactly like Matt Murray's does, and the Leafs are using assets to try to get off of it or trying to bury it. I'm saying, like, the worst contracts – I think get signed like that with goaltenders who are not really proven, who had a good situation, and end up getting extended.
Like what's going to happen with Kemper. Exactly and, what's about to happen with him.
And what happened with Grubauer the year before. I think mm-hmm. Kemper's track record is a little bit more clear and obvious, and I think that if Toronto had been... Like, again, I think that there's cases for all of these guys when it shakes out. But as of today, after acquiring the Matt Murray deal, Toronto has a little over $6 million in cap space. They can finagle with that by burying guys like Wayne Simmonds in the minors, which I think is going to happen. You know, that's assuming Kyle Clifford starts the year in the minors. That's an extra kind of like $2 million. They could move Alex Kerfoot. They could move Justin Hall. There's ways of them expanding that cap space. But as of right now, you've got to basically rebuild your bottom six and find a backup goaltender and bring back free agents Pierre Engvall and Rasmus Sandin at $6 million. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty tall order right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So that brings me, what do you want me to start with? Do you want me to go pro-con, or do you want me to go list of pros, list of cons?
Actually, let's do list of pros, list of cons. I like that better.
Which one do you want to start with?
Cons first.
Okay, yeah, because I feel like I've been pretty positive about this just in terms of painting the picture.
Rip on it, JD. Let's go.
Con number one, I think Dubas lost the negotiation. I think he lost.
Campbell.
No, I think that he lost the negotiation with Pierre Dorion. I think Pierre Dorion and Dubas went to the negotiation table, and Dubas wanted more salary retention, and he blinked. And this is why I think that he lost the negotiation. The Ottawa Senators are very, very clearly in a position where they want to win. They don't necessarily have the pressure of needing to make the playoffs next year. But I think that there's buzz around their franchise. They just acquired Alex DeBrincat. They want that new stadium deal done. They're trying to rejuvenate a fan base that has oftentimes felt stepped on. And I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, but I do think that there is a, hey, things can change because there can be a new ownership change. There could be a new stadium change. Maybe we are not going to be the cheapest organization in Canada. Maybe we're going to spend money. Maybe we're going to have a downtown arena that people actually want to go to. And there is going to be a young, exciting team centered around Tkachuk and Alex DeBrincat and Thomas Chabot. Wow. What a fun time to be an Ottawa Senators fan. I think that people are buying into the team. Here's this albatross of a contract that they have that is preventing them from being in things like the Claude Giroux sweepstakes. They needed to get off that Matt Murray money. And then my question became, who else was in on Matt Murray? What other organization around hockey right now was going to take him on? And this is actually kind of my thing that I think is fascinating about the goaltending market right now in general, is that it's like, if you're Jack Campbell and you're Darcy Kuemper today, and you have the two landing spots that are going, yeah, we're the two places that are going to sign you guys. I would be looking at that if I was Washington now, and if I was Edmonton now, going, why are we going to give you extra money? Like, Toronto has just come off the table as a potential suitor.
Mm-hmm.
So why does my offer need to be what we thought it was going to be a couple of days ago, which was the north of six for Kuemper, north of five-ish for Jack? All I'm saying is I think that there's a way that those other teams could all of a sudden get a little tricky. Because, like, look around the NHL. Where are you going to go? What are the other destinations that are looking for you guys? Like, where are the places that are giving Jack Campbell $5.5 million this year, or Darcy Kuemper anything close to six, now that it's just kind of two places remaining with the two main goalies? What am I missing here? I don't know. I just feel like Toronto got out of the way early, and that they blinked a little early, and that the Matt Murray deal would have been there for them because he already had a no-trade clause. He could nix his decision to go to certain places, as he already did with the Sabres. He clearly wanted to come to Toronto, and Toronto made this move early ahead of free agency to settle in a bit of their position. But eating 25% of Matt Murray's money and giving Matt Murray essentially a two-year contract of $4.78 million, I think is proof that Kyle Dubas blinked. I think that he looked at this and he was afraid to go into it. Then there's a secondary piece of it, which is not only did you eat that extra money, all you got back was a third-round pick. Like, cap space is supposed to be this incredibly valuable thing. Ottawa didn't retain much, and you got a third-round pick to get off of one of the worst contracts in hockey that they needed to get off.
Massive seventh round pick in 2024.
Yeah, I don't know what future assets means. Well,
I hate when they write future considerations. I'm like, what? Just tell me.
I don't know what that means. No, in hockey, it can't be anything. Like, that's a baseball thing, and usually it's a low minor A prospect that ends up happening. Either way, I think that the Sens were in a position that was equally as desperate as Toronto's. Toronto was desperate for a goaltender, right? But Matt Murray wanted to be here. He had the connection for here. He had a no-trade list. His contract was $6.25 million that they were not going to buy out, but that they could not bury in a meaningful way. And the Ottawa Senators wanted to take a step and add a bunch of other players. And in a year where there was cap space was king, Kyle Dubas ended up paying a goaltender who has played 85 games in the last 3 years and who has had a concussion at the end of last season, and who has had a 900 save over the last 3 years of injury-riddled play. $4.68 million on a two-year deal and only got a third-round pick back for that, I think he blinked. I think he lost a negotiation that's very clear in terms of which fan base is happier today mm-hmm. in terms of the way that got done, and it's the Ottawa Senators.
Do you think if he had waited till free agency opened that he would have been able to get this same deal for less money, or would it have been the other side of the coin where he sees Jack Campbell and Kemper get those massive deals and they want to finagle a little bit more for Matt Murray?
This gets back to the Jack Campbell thing, and this goes, I think I'm going to put this into the cons.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the cons is that of this move is that the Leafs played their hand very poorly with Jack Campbell. However you want to spin it, however you want to discuss Jack's future and his now potential earnings, they played it poorly with Jack Campbell. So here's a clip. Elliot Friedman jumped on Sportsnet Central last night with Ken Reed and discussed what exactly happened with Jack and like his future basically going to Edmonton, and then what happened between he and the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And we'd heard there was a 5x5 out there for Jack Campbell. We believe that's Edmonton. And yes, I think we'd all be surprised if Campbell doesn't end up there in the near future.
You just said that. Are there Leafs fans out there thinking, how come Toronto couldn't do 5x5 for Campbell?
They could have. I'm not sure they would have been comfortable doing that. You know, the whole Campbell situation, honestly, Ken, the whole Campbell situation has been kind of strange. I think that basically Campbell got an offer from Toronto before the season. And to be honest, I think it was at a time when Toronto wasn't fully comfortable yet with Campbell as either a full-time number one or a long-term full-time number one. They made him an offer of about 3x275, I'd heard. And the last year of that deal was a very low number, under $1 million. And I heard Campbell countered, as his agents, when you would expect, with an offer on the way far end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. a very, very big offer, or a very, very big counter that the Maple Leafs were not going to accept. And I just don't think it ever got back on the same footing. For whatever reason, I don't think they were able to recover, get back there. And I just don't think that Toronto would have been willing to do. Like, if you look at the Murray, whatever you think of the deal, mm-hmm. basically they've just taken a two-year deal at just over almost $4.7
million. Yeah.
So it sounds to me like they're much more comfortable with that than they would be for a 5x5 on Campbell. And time will tell.
Time will tell. Time will absolutely tell.
Oof.
And again, it's Text Line Tuesday today. Fire away your text, 590-590, and reach out at JD Bunkus, at Ailish4Far, for anything you want to discuss. But Kiprios reported this early in the year, that the Leafs lowballed Campbell, and that he was apparently insulted. And this is 2 years in a row where Kyle Dubas and a goaltender have had a bit of a falling out, and it has become acrimonious and obvious when it came to free agency time. And I think that's one of the cons of this. And I don't even want to, like, this isn't the con of signing Matt Murray, but I think that this played into, or I can't help but feel like this played into how the business got done. If you're Ottawa, you knew Toronto didn't have another lever. They didn't have another option because it wasn't a very well-kept secret that negotiations between the Leafs and Jack Campbell were non-existent. Mm-hmm. What did we hear? Lowball offer during the beginning of the season. Then the season ends. Jack Campbell doesn't have an offer. We get closer to July. We get closer to what is traditionally July 1st, where we start thinking about free agency in this country with hockey. Jack Campbell's agent tells the world that they have not exchanged numbers with Kyle Dubas and the Toronto Maple Leafs. That there's no traction between these two teams. It's public. It's out in the open. This negotiation was clear and obvious. They did not do a good enough job of maintaining at least the belief to keep around the league that the Leafs could re-sign him. They didn't do a good enough job of at least bluffing that they were going to be willing to re-sign Jack Campbell. They didn't do a good enough job of maintaining that relationship and making sure that that side, Jack's side, felt respected enough that they could come together on some type of a deal. They never were even close, and that was a telegraph to the rest of the league that Toronto was in a position of desperation because they were not going to have the money for Darcy Kemper. They were not going to have the money to make a John Gibson trade, and I think that gave Pierre Dorion extra leverage at that table knowing, hey, I got to get off this money, but somebody else might come calling for Matt Murray at half of his price anyway. somebody might come calling for Matt Murray at $3 million. And yeah, maybe I don't get a third round pick back, but who cares? I'll take that money. I'll be fine with it. And I didn't give him to the Toronto freaking Maple Leafs, where if he plays well, I look like a total bozo and everybody's back out on me. And I think Dubas blinked. Looking at this deal, I think Dubas blinked. I think he ate the extra $1.6 million. And yeah, it's not the biggest thing overall. $1.6 million, you know, a year over 2 years is not the biggest deal for most organizations. But I just outlined to you that the Leafs have about $6 million to play with right now. And yeah, that could have been kind of useful money. That could have been pretty useful cash. So when they move Justin Hall off the books and they bring back, you know, a veteran minimum defenseman or whatever they end up doing with that position, if they can knock off money, we're talking about savings of maybe half of that. So it is significant. I don't think it's the world-ending thing, but I do think that he blinked and I do think that he lost the negotiation. So that is a con. And the Jack Campbell part of this, I think, plays into that con. Okay, next con. Because these are what I have so far. You helped the Sens out of a crazy bad contract that was tough for them to move. Toronto was a place he was willing to go. You blinked first. You lost the negotiation. And the secondary part of that is you paid the extra $1.6 million. It actually stings your organization quite a bit. And the Jack Campbell negotiations and the way that you played that out publicly are not a good look for, I think, this front office. The next con, he's just not healthy. And it's the most obvious one. He's just not been healthy. He's played 85 games over three seasons. And you can talk about these stretches of play. You can talk about playing behind that defense in Ottawa and all these other things. But he just has not been healthy. And this is a guy who, in his career, very early on, the discussions about him were health. He had had injuries from the very beginning in very big places. And so I have a tough time with that. I have a tough time with... This is why I think that you really need the secondary move before Eric Schallgren is... What are you realistically going to rely on this guy to do when it comes to regular season games played, but then also keeping him right for the postseason, assuming he will be the number one at that time? Because again, like, we're talking about 27 and 20 games the last 2 years.
But you need that tandem of like a 1A, 1B at this point. Someone's going to play basically half the games.
But Ailish, what do you, again, you can't really say that. No, but you also can't really say that when you're paying the guy $4.7 million.
This is why it's in the cons pile.
This is it. You can't tell me that he's a 1A, 1B. That works when you're playing Jack Campbell $1.25 million, and then you can go out and make your goaltending position as a whole cost what he does. Mm-hmm. Like Mrazek's contract, this is why it's like, you know, I tweeted this last night, but it's pretty wild to think about giving up and paying an asset to get out of Mrazek's money and then giving a guy a contract that like has the same the same length of Mrazek, who's also an injury-prone guy and someone who's underperformed the last couple of years. Like, that's where the Sault Ste. Marie stuff comes in, and you start to go like, boy, oh boy. And now, like, I'm going to shift into the pros because they start with, you know, his pedigree versus Mrazek's. But it still is pretty wild that we're talking about a 900-ish save. Like, he has had 1 year in which his save percentage was above 900 in his last three, and it was 906 save. And again, it was actually a pretty good year, but even still, that was only 20 games. That was 20 games of that. It's a pretty small sample. So his inability to stay healthy and the fact that he's coming off a concussion, I do like that Toronto got to do their due diligence with him and that they got to take a look at him. But also, when you're a team that's as desperate as Toronto was...
Yeah, what were they going to say? Oh, never mind.
Exactly. It's like, do you trust it as much? Okay, so pros list.
Wait, one question about where this will go for you. Yeah. Is this being Dubas putting his job on the line?
Yeah, 100%.
The whole management, is that a con for you or a pro for you? Or is that more of a
I don't view it as a part of this particular conversation.
Does it look as a desperate move to you that's a con or a confidence move to you that's a pro?
No, I think that they, like I said, I think that they misplayed the goaltending market and that they didn't have any flexibility and that they let it get to this point. This is one of those things where I can say, oh yeah, you can go, JD made this whole case about the goaltending market being really poor and that the Leafs were just unfortunate that they got into the situation where there was no goalies available. You're allowed to develop your own goalies. You're allowed to make better moves for goaltenders a season ago and not sign Mrazek. Like, this is, you are now paying the toll for an entire tenure as general manager of mishandling the goaltending position. Mm-hmm. Like, this is one fumble after another that has put you in this spot where you need to go after Matt Murray. So if you're asking me about, like, pros and cons, like, I don't think about it necessarily within the context of evaluating this deal, but I do not think that Kyle Dubas and this front office have done a good job with goaltending for this team. They haven't. They have not done it. And what you're seeing with this Matt Murray signing and trade, whatever, sorry, the trade, is very, very conclusively the result of poor management at one position, mm-hmm. poor development at one position. It's why they're bringing in a new goaltending coach. It's why they're trying to reevaluate what they do within the organization at the position. And to that, I would say it might be too late, guys. It might already be too late. If Matt Murray goes down early in the year and you are going with a Shalgren and a backup combo and other teams are once again trying to hold your feet to the fire over assets so that you can acquire middle-of-the-pack goaltending, it's going to be really, really difficult for this fan base to swallow. And yes, I do think that the jobs are going to go. The pros with Matt Murray, I think, are very simple. You didn't have to give him term. I outlined that against the other goaltenders, that it's 2 years. It's a roll of the dice over two seasons. And you can be saying, again, I hear the counter already, JD, you can't be rolling the dice with Auston Matthews' prime. And I agree. But my only point is that the goaltending position, when we're talking about guys who are not an elite tier, in my opinion right now, is too volatile to be giving crazy term to, and that you're still rolling the dice on Auston Matthews' prime with Jack Campbell on the deal that he might be getting, or on Darcy Kemper to a lesser extent, but I just don't think that you were going to be able to afford him. That's literally all of the rest of your cap space, or $2 extra million. Like, you could have $4 million left if you go out and get Darcy Kemper. Like, it's a tough proposition. It does allow you to just slide Shalgren in there a little bit more easily as your backup. You do have a more comfortable goaltender in net, but that's the only other guy on the market that actually won a Stanley Cup, and he won it behind one of the best teams I've ever seen assembled in the salary cap era. Pro number two. The 18 games that Matt Murray had last year are pretty stellar, and if you look back on it, it's really, really impressive. He had a .941 save percentage up until the last two games of the year, and he kind of fell apart, which included an 8-goals-against game to finish the year, which is a pretty massive outlier that dropped his save percentage by a pretty mm-hmm. significant point. Or it dropped it a lot of percentage points.
Mm-hmm.
And that play, though, is pretty wow. The only problem is that he took a concussion, and then you have to wonder, well, how hard is it going to be to recover and get back to that place? It's not like he was just kind of rolling off of that and then totally fine. Pro number two, they did bring back an asset. Like, nobody else that's going to be signing somebody in free agency is going to be getting a third-round pick. And I don't think that third-round pick is immensely valuable. Like, it's okay. But
it could just be used in something. It could be used
for, you know what it could be used for? Piece. You know what else it could be used for?
Get drafting. Some depth.
Yeah, drafting, because this team has not done a great job of, you know, mm-hmm. pulling guys up from the minors, and you're seeing that this year, and that's going to be a big part of the story of this season that we're going to see play out very soon, which is, can you find guys from the Marlies from last year or from your organizational depth that can come up and help? Because this is going to be a big year for the Nick Robertsons. This is going to be mm-hmm. a big end of the season for, hey, what is Alex Steeves going to do? Can some of these guys come up and actually contribute? Because if the Leafs can't get any of that, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to pull multiple guys from free agency that make the one-point-somethings and nail those picks again. We'll see, but that's a really, really tough thing to do. What's usually easier to do is to have young, cheap talent come up from within your organization and supplement the guys that are getting paid. So that's pro. Those are some pros. There's also the pedigree. There is. I'm sorry. Like, I saw my buddy Jake Beliefs tweeted this, but it's so true. Is like, you know, it's a goaltender arc. It's not something where you have to look at it year over year. Matt Murray has proven that he can play at a level that is among the league's best goaltenders. He can do that. That is within him. You can say that is gone and that is not there for him anymore, but he still is only 28 years old. And he is a guy that has two Stanley Cups. Mm-hmm. And those Stanley Cups they're not recent, you know, like he didn't just win those. But go look at his playoff stats. Go look at his stats from some of those seasons. Like, they're pretty damn impressive. You know, 2018-19, he posted a .919 save. There's a reason that he got that contract from Ottawa in the first place, and it's because he does have pedigree. And if you think about putting him behind this Maple Leafs defense core, which is going to be better than it has been literally since Kyle Dubas has been general manager, it is. They're going to start the year with the best blue line that they've had under Dubas, under Lou, wherever you want to put it.
That's not even with the understanding of what happens with Sandin.
This is the best blue line that they've had in the salary cap era. They're well coached, they have stars, and they're going to score. The ask of this player is not what it is of some teams that rely more purely on goaltending. They're not asking him to be Andre Vasilevsky. And I know that's, but like, they're not asking him for that. They need him to be good. I don't think they need him to be great. But he is a guy that can, I think, steal you a game in the playoffs if he can get there healthy and he can be right. And I think that knowing that he played to that degree last year, that night, like if he didn't get hurt at the end of last season, or he doesn't have those two games, and it's 18 games, but he played healthy, and it is that .941 save, I think a lot of people in this city would not really be too upset about what was happening here. That's all. I think that pedigree matters. I think that having one matters, and I think having it not be like this is a 40-year-old player, a 36-year-old player who won, is actually relevant in this conversation. And if we're talking about teams, and you know, everyone's talked a lot about how Toronto needs to bring in winners and people who have won mm-hmm. before and done it before and been there before, well, here's a
that also aren't won. 45 years old, a yep. young winner. What a little treat that this
here
is.
Here is a person who has won before, and so that's all I would say is that mm-hmm. there's no term. The price is semi-acceptable. I think that he's $1.68 million overpaid right now. And that's on Dubas, and that's a mistake of his, and he needs to find a way to account for that money and make sure that that money's okay. He's an injury-prone guy, but the market was very difficult. But this is someone who showed a lot of flashes very, very recently and kind of proved to a lot of people last year that if he is healthy, he can still play up to very, very elite levels. He played behind a terrible team in Ottawa mm-hmm. that did not give him a lot of help. He was put into a bad situation, and he was hurt a lot. Yeah. You don't have a lot of cap space, but you didn't have a ton of options, and this is what happens. But
and
your
a
options
lot of my
also
feelings
by...
will also change or be amplified with what happens next with the only other two goaltenders available. Like, obviously, it's in a vacuum. This signing, this trade happened first, but I think the reason it was in the cons or the pros list was because of, hey, either coming in with a state of we have a goaltender, or if you went into tomorrow and you ended up getting something better, then we look back at this even more negatively. So I'm really actually looking forward to seeing what happens with the only other goaltenders that are available, because I think that will obviously skew how we feel about this deal significantly.
I also do believe that there had to be a reality in which Jack Campbell could have been acquired for to the Leafs for less earlier had it been a better negotiation.
I agree. That's a bad look to lose the guy that loves the city, loves the team, is beloved by the city. Everybody wants him to be a Leaf, and for him to walk away because of an awful low ball and you just couldn't find a way to make it work. And if he gets $5 million somewhere else and you're paying this guy 4.68, I know it's on less amount of years,
it's a huge part
of it. It stings. Yeah, of course.
It could sting, and it'll depend on what Edmonton does next year with him. And mm-hmm. yes, it is a very much we will see. But again, this will be the final piece of Dubas and co. in this city. If this works out, if this dice roll is we knew this player, we believed in this player, we brought in a pedigree championship winner who had shown those flashes, you're going to be thanking the heavens. I think that the position is so volatile that I'd rather have the less term. And to me personally, again, I don't like how they got here. I don't agree with how they got here. I think that they deserve to be criticized for how they got here, more so than what they actually did once they arrived. Because once they arrived, I have less problem with. I don't mind this move. I mind how they got here.